So the next and last speaker of this afternoon session before the concert, because I remember you and I will remember you again that there is a concert later, Angela Candelo. She's going to talk about documentality in the web, legal is in red, so everything that you will not see in this presentation has to do with that. A legal philosophical perspective. Go ahead.
So, law, documentality in the web. I will develop three main points. First of all, point number one: law and documentality. And by this, I basically the aim of this work, of this paper, is to link the theory of documentality as formulated by Maurizio Ferraris and some legal issues. I have to be more precise, and it is important, I think, to be more precise about what of documentality is actually relevant for law, because I think that is actually the real interesting and tricky issue that relates law and documentality, because of course we all, if we think of law, we can think of a notary, we can think of a contract, we all think immediately that law entails documents in the sense of recording and registrations, as Maurizio says. What is more striking for me, and it relates to the number of theses that are developed in documentality, is the broader and I would say even deeper concept of trace. The concept of trace includes the document as such, so the document that can be signed in the notary's office. So it's like the paradigmatic idea of legal document. But the concept of trace as a recording, as we were saying before, entails many other things. A mere sign, a mere contact between two people that somehow is recorded, it entails some kind of information and data, and these two words are going to be very relevant for the whole discourse. What I mean through this connection between law and documentality is the connection between law and the power of these traces. In particular, I will now quickly mention the points of the theory of documentality that are relevant for the law, and that are the following. In order to create the word, we need traces. That is also we can also apply this thesis to the contract in the notary's office. But there are some other points that do not apply to the concrete piece of paper, and which are the following. The social world is created by means of traces. So already the concept of traces enlarging, so from the concrete document signed also by a web, but from the conventionalized agreement, the trace also enlarges the idea towards the idea of also contact, of some kind of legal relation that can be established outside or before or beyond the contract in itself and the intentionality of itself. I was mentioning it concerning what Jacopo was saying. There are all sorts of extra contractual types of relations. Then the trace make the reality emerge, and traces produce new traces. So traces in the theory of documentality, as formulated by Maurizio Ferraris, are autopoietic. So they have a force, they have a potential that of self-reproduction. And this, I think, is what makes the connection between law and documentality particularly relevant. And also, and now I move to still in the outline, but to point number two, also what produces conflicts. So the fact that a trace can generate new trace and can generate new relations, new contacts, new forms of responsibility can generate conflicts that needs regulated. And the third point that I will develop is what this documental perspective, so to say, can suggest to law and to lawyers, and literally also to people that write down conventions and directives, which is the type of legal acts I will refer to. So why law and documentality? Documental conflicts, and finally documental perspectives. From the perspective of the law, then maybe the philosophers will tell me whether law is actually also suggesting something to philosophy, so it's also reciprocal. So, merci. Okay, here we go, first.
I'm coming.
Yes. Okay. All right, so this is very tricky. So I will, as I said, compensate. The slide says traces, responsibility and the legal relation. And point number one is what I already mentioned. It's typical. I basically anticipate some of the things I will then say in the already in the outline. So point number one is the fact that documentality, as understood through the idea of trace and not through the idea of a necessarily conventional and formal, this is very important from the legal perspective, agreement, goes beyond, that is the other secret word, the document, and therefore shows this autopoietic force. So this relates directly to the second point of this aspect, which is that we can be responsible, also this is a very important word, in fact it was in red and it still is in red, we can be responsible also if there is there has not been direct contact or no will or intention explicitly expressed. So this is, from the legal perspective, extremely important. And it relates directly to this autopoietic force. So in as much as in the theory of the mobilized animal, this morning Maurizio said that the fact that there is a recording creates and generates this responsibility, so this all dimension. So there is a recording, and therefore we feel responsible, and thus we are we feel called to activate, to act. In the same way, in the legal sphere, the fact that there is some kind of trace, which I will now define specifically, is already the reason for the creation of some kind of responsibility, of some kind of legal relation. So it is in a way sufficient that there is some kind of trace in order for a responsibility to be generated. Merci. Sì, è questo, sì. All right, so this is the specification of the former slide. Here again, I said traces, responsibility, and the legal relation. Point number one: what I define trace, and what it is interesting for the law, and might be problematic from the perspective of the theory of documentality, is that the trace intended, for example, from the data retention directive and the right to be forgotten that this morning was mentioned somehow, the type of trace that can be relevant from the legal perspective is a trace that can be used to prove something, to testify something, to somehow create some kind of information, let's say, because I completely agree with what Roberto Casati this morning said. The fact that we get to know an information, we get to an information, doesn't necessarily mean that we have a knowledge, a savoir in a larger sense about that. But for the law, as far as the legal responsibility is concerned, the fact that they have access to some data, which I think can be carried through the trace, here again, sometimes I underline, for those of you who were not here, I underline some words because they are in red and so they are hidden for you. So the traces carry data and information, which does not mean the trace identifies with data and information, or information. But the trace, as understood from the legal perspective, can transfer, can be the carrier of some kind of information that is that then is used. And I think that the conflicts, as it often is in law, show this very clearly. So show both this autopoietic potential I mentioned before of the traces, of the documents intended in Maurizio's sense, and also of the trace as a specific aspect of documentality. Very recently, a couple of months ago, the Italian Supreme Court decided that posting some kind of insult or bad words on someone's Facebook wall constitutes the crime of defamation, libel. It's exactly equal to defamation and via press, via social media. So, for the first time, Facebook was actually identified with a newspaper, either online or non-online. So a social network for the Italian Supreme Court was identified.
Or you can maybe you can use the other one. The one.
Yes. Okay. So. the conflict, as I was saying, shows that this trace, by carrying information, has some kind of conflictual potential. Why? Because in the argument developed by the Supreme Court, they explicitly say, we are saying that insulting someone, so posting an insult on someone's Facebook wall, equals the crime of defamation via social media, via press, in Italian would be diffamazione a mezzo stampa, because of the potential of proliferation of an information posted on Facebook. So because of this potential, because of the diffusive and pervasive capacity and force that a sign, a trace, a word, a number of words, a sentence, posted on Facebook can have, therefore this action equals this crime, this specific crime. So this is an example of what I mean by a trace can generate a specific legal conflict because of this self-generative autopoietic force, which is mentioned in documentality. Now we move to. We still remain in the conflictual area, because I think it's the most interesting. Less red words, thanks God. No, here the most relevant, of course, and also there is a comma there. So the type of conflicts that that are related to the web that are currently debated, that are have been regulated, that have been generated through the web, I think because of this recording, emerging, and resisting strength of the traces, are mainly, but this is not an exhaustive list, the interest, the value of privacy against the value of security. I will just mention them. I won't go into details. Again, privacy against the freedom of expression or the right to information. So these are the type of conflicts that have been generated. And I will just talk about one specific history, one specific instance and a paradigmatic case, which for the European Union law on privacy has been definitely relevant, and in fact has also led to a declaration of the rights, internet rights recently, that already been has been drafted in Italy, and has created a lot of debate And I'm referring here to the so-called data retention, that is the magical word, data retention directive, which was released in 2006, and that was declared invalid last year in 2014. I will now explain why. After the decision of the case, Google, this is the other mysterious word, Google Spain, decided by the European Court of Justice. Now, what was the point of this directive? This directive wanted to protect many, probably, because I don't even know which kind of people are in the audience, but possible that some of you are familiar with the content of the directive. I mean, which kind of background people in the audience have. So the aim, the objective of the directive was protecting personal data that were stored through services that were used by service providers, like, for example, telephone, like Vodafone, for example. So service providers for telephone or internet services. And so what the problematic aspect of the directive was that the directive introduced an obligation for these service providers to keep, to retain, in fact, this is the important word, to retain, to keep the data, to store the data for a specific amount of months or for a specific period and in a specific place. So also it was temporally and physically localized. And so the problem was the legal problem, the legal issue. So to go to the core of the issue was that this obligation was introduced. So the fact that it was the value of privacy was valued so much that the obligation to retain the data was introduced. Now the problem was that with Google Spain, also other cases before, but through Google Spain, this issue, this conflict, became also in a way more public and more knowable in the public and political discourse, and because again the problem was that an individual had found information about himself on Google basically, and he thought that he had the right to see this information cancelled, so literally the right to be forgotten, or at least the right that some aspects of his personal biography could be forgotten, erased, cancelled. Now, I think, once again, that that this type of... resta ancora su questo. I think that once again the fact that a directive was released, that this caused conflicts, and that the conflicts were resolved in a specific way, shows and confirms the theory according to which traces have this autopoietic force, have this self-generative force. That's for sure, because otherwise, if there would be no pressure, no fear that these traces could generate new information or that could be interpreted in a wrong way, because the problem was basically that some information that was not particularly pleasant could be found on Facebook. So that specific trace and its potentiality, its potential use, was problematic for the interests of the individual, both for its for his privacy and for his social reputation, for his public reputation, of course, and therefore for his social identity and the possibility of getting a new job and so on and so forth, having new friends, very simply. I think that this can be considered a paradigmatic mirror of what the autopoietic force of these traces mean. Now, if Enrico could go to the other slide, I will quickly move to, as I already anticipated, this last year's European Court of Justice decision on Google Spain started and generated a very important debate that led, for example, in Italy to the first draft of a declaration of internet rights that then was presented in the Italian Chamber of Deputies in July. The type of words, the type of categories the charter, the declaration refers to are very interesting because there is a huge force put on the concept of neutrality, on how information on internet should be treated in a neutral way. Also, of course, there is a reference to the right to be forgotten because it's the issue at the moment. So, once again, if we look at even if in this case we don't have a conflict or a directive, so a legal text that has been declared invalid. So even if in this case there is no explicit polemic issue generated by what the trace is and how the trace can be used, still the type of language, so a semantic analysis of the declaration, shows that through the choice of the words, shows that the problem is exactly the proliferation of the data, the proliferation of this what we can call the trace in this specific context. I will. I think that I don't have to. Yes. So I will try to quickly go towards the conclusion and to what I think the theory of documentality suggests to law. And or I think it's particularly interesting to be discussed because it might suggest also other things. But I think that what I call this the documental perspective, which is also the conclusive point of this paper, is that I will now interpret the slide for you. In legal conflicts, the existence of traces which carry data and information, and the mobilization, also the resistance, but in particular the mobilization, the fact that they can produce actions, reactions, conflicts, converge. So what for Maurizio's thesis is central and focal from the philosophical perspective and from the social perspective. So the fact that the social object exists through the trace, and because it exists through the trace, it has an implicit and, in a way, intrinsic resistance. So the fact of the existence is directly related to the fact of its resistance, and therefore of its capacity to mobilize. Because the point is exactly that: if I get this email and I know that there is a recording of this email, therefore, I activate myself because I know already the potential consequences of not answering. So that is what happens on the behavioral and on the level of the action. But it is exactly what happens also in law, I think. Because the problem of the data retention, the Google Spain case, show that data and information should be considered, should have been probably treated. In fact, many people said that the data retention already when it was released was already outdated. And that goes already towards my conclusion. If the legal perspective, let's say, because I don't want to blame one specific lawyer or the European Parliament, but if we would take as lawyers seriously these let's say, intrinsical reciprocity between the existence and the resistance and also the potential of the mobilization of a trace and therefore also of an information, and not only of a contract that then generates the obligation to do something. Then, so if we would take this idea for more seriously, also from the legal perspective, probably probably it would be the regulation of those conflicts about data would be more effective, because the problem has been until now, or for sure until last year, that as usual, law comes afterwards. So there is a problem, and then there is a conflict, and then, but that's natural. I mean, I'm not, again, blaming law as an impersonal object. I'm just saying that the very nature of law is coming afterwards. Now, for what, as far as the web is concerned, coming, like arriving afterwards is basically natural, because as we've seen today already, we don't know what the web is, where it is, how it, we do know, but it's really hard to catch up all the time, already as a social object. Of course, this even more so if we think of the type of conflicts it can generate. So the problem was probably the, in a way, the ambition of regulating types of conflicts which could be probably more easily resolved on a case-by-case basis, in a way, also by a minor request for universal principles, like such as, for example, privacy, which is very delicate and very complex, and that doesn't always help in a way to call privacy into the debate. So I think that linking together, so taking the theory of total mobilization seriously, would be very helpful for law. And this brings me to the last point. Which is the following. If we agree on the fact that the medium is the message, as McLuhan said, so if we agree on the fact, we don't. Okay, no, but well, if we understand in this specific case the medium, but leaving aside all the Derridean objections, that today the medium we're talking about is the web. So let's if we take the web for what it is, I'm still talking from the legal perspective, then this type of medium that is like a huge machine, a huge system of traces and more traces that multiply more traces and so on and so forth, the medium already entails and defines the relation and its existence. And thus law should adapt more quickly to the web, and so to its nature, to its documental nature in this philosophical sense and not just in the concrete sense. So with the idea that the type of categories and of relations and of conflicts and legal conflicts that can be generated go far beyond the type of categories and legal conflicts that can be categorized a priori as it usually happens in law. So this is my conclusion. Thank you very much for being very interactive with the red thing.
So I have a question about the way you attack this issue, this problematic. And I was wondering why you didn't take an ethological approach.
Ethology,
yes. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's a bit maybe a dangerous way to explain this, but traces is the way animals mark laws in particularly territorial private property. They mark their territory, and this is the way they make law. And so with technique. The human animal have been able to make traces with writing, and this is the way the human has been able to write law. So with writings, with written laws, he created a framework, a law framework, and so I think because web is a new way to make traces, it's also a new way to it create a new law framework. So it's I think we need to see the interaction between traces and law more this way, but on the web, I think traces on the web is just a way to not mark territory, some places, physical places, but intellectual places, knows places.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean the connection between law and writing is as relevant as the connection between human sociality and writing. So it's I would say necessary, fundamental. So I completely agree with you. I find actually your reference to ontology and to animal traces very interesting, also from the semiotic perspective. I think of a very interesting essay written by Carlo Ginzburg about spies. In which he refers to how legal investigation works through traces. But that's I would say that's a very specific concept of trace. So I think that concept of trace, and Maurizio can actually completely, I think, testify it, is fascinating exactly because it has this very, this capacity of applying to a behavioral context and a very specific one, and it has the capacity to be understood also from a different perspective, and I think also from a broader perspective. So I actually think we agree. I took specific cases, and I probably risked a little bit because already associating the trace with data and information, I think will create. I might feel already what's coming, but I think we agree. Yes.
I really appreciated it. The possible question is referred to the previous slide in which. No matter of coming back because the relevant point were in red. So that spoke about in a sense a causal relation between information and mobilization.
Existence and mobilization.
I completely agree on this point. The question is, could we also understand the normativity as there is always a problem in saying what is normativity? What is exactly normativity? And one can say normativity is mobilization. I mean, we say also the definition of force of law or of death letter suggests that a kind of mobilization is the only signet of normativity. It's just an obscure intuition, but what is interesting is that in this science there is not an inside of normativity, but just some effects which are conceived as proofs of normativity.
I particularly like the connection between normativity and mobilization because it is I think it's easier to understand it, or at least for me, I have a legal background, and for me, reading Total Mobilization was like a relief, because I thought, okay, so it can be theorized. So this idea that there is some kind of deontic force, which derives directly from the fact that we feel we have to act, because otherwise there would be consequences, explains on a behavioral, social, anthropological, as you defined it, level, what at a legal theory level Kelsen is trying to explain through the validity of a norm, which is justified by another norm, which goes through a regressus as infinitum to this Grundnorm, which is a conceptual construction, which makes sense. I'm not saying Kelsen doesn't make any sense. I'm just saying that at the level of the enforcement, what then becomes relevant is exactly the consequences the some kind of law produces. And so, for example, the little story of the data retention directive explains through the case, through its problematization, and also then finally through the judgment, precisely this, that then in the end what was normatively relevant was the fact that these data could have constituted some kind of mobilizing force. So the anthropological level can constitute a very fertile field on which the legal theory can be constructed, much more than the mere conceptual level where the validity.
What is the origin of royal authority? The king usually says is God, otherwise it's the will of the nation, but at the very beginning was God. It was an attempt to find a Grundnorm, mm-hmm. or a transcendental meaning, mm-hmm. in the origin of the normativity inscribed in royal power. But another explanation can be, following your suggestion, that there is a performative origin of the normativity. Something happens that is performative and make it so that people act following this what happened. This is, for instance, very banal in fashion, for instance. Mm-hmm. From how comes the normativity of fashion? There is no one who feels that this normativity comes otherwise than from the way in which people dress.
Mm-hmm.
Last question by...
I have one observation, but you may correct me if I'm wrong. It seems to me there is an issue with the presentation of the right to be forgotten, because it's a misnomer, as we know. It is absolutely, there is no erasure whatsoever involved. What is involved is delinking, whereas the information remains. And that, I think, very crucial if one reads what happens.
What is the issue? I didn't understand.
The issue is that there is no erasure. Nothing is erased.
Erasure, yeah.
No, no.
There is no erasure, yes.
No. What there is the delinking. It's the links, the hyperlink that disappears, but not the content. And that's very important. In the ruling that happened, because that also actually shows that the nature of digital trace has already something significant about it that's very distinct, perhaps, from other kinds of
traces. Which cannot be erased.
No, there is a desire not to erase. Of course, it can be erased, but the way that things were formulated is not to erase, but to make the link disappear from the search engine, and that's a very
yes. I didn't specify.
That raises a very significant issue. Because then the nature of the trace is here associated with both the potential of the link for kind of mimetic generation, mm-hmm. that you call autopoetic. But furthermore, it seems to me where the issue is more perhaps important, is precisely there is an intention after the fact that is associated with the trace. And mm-hmm. that's where we get into more difficult and I would say kind of muddy discussion.
Very muddy.
But that's why it's complex in some sense. And I think it's very important to that particular aspect. And that's why I sort of reacted to the message and the medium, because in that case, mm-hmm. obviously, what is the message and the medium? I don't get it.
You Well, you don't really distinguish them.
Yeah, but no, there is, of course, a distinction, because the link exists.
Yeah.
It's not visible, but it is findable. That's what's important. You can find it by a different way. The demonstration has been done over and over again. And that's where I have a question about, in this particular kind of instance, framing it with the McLuhan issue.
Now I understand. I understand your point now that you also refer to the McLuhan quote. Probably it's what moved me was more the symbolic, literally, from a religious archetypical perspective, the symbolic value of the trace and the symbolic value attributed by law to this idea of forgetting, of this cancellation, which is not really a concrete and factual and material cancellation. So in this specific case, the quote afterwards was more a reference to the web as a net, as an object, and much less to the specific way the erasing or non-erasing, the possibility to get to the trace and to the information, more importantly, anyways, works. So in a way, it was a hyper-simplification of both how the non-erasure works and the concept of medium, which is very obscure itself, also very, very muddy, because it depends very much on how what we understand by it. So I understand your point, and I actually took notes, and I will develop it more specifically. But it, I agree with you. I understand why the medium is the message provoked a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Much. I hoped we could come back on the fiduciary issues. But maybe we'll do that tomorrow. But for now, I just had a question on the problem of the source of normativity. Maybe it's linked with Maurizio's question. Mm-hmm. Somehow in documentality, you have this idea that the document is some transcendental entity, in the sense that you cannot say much about it. And it's at the origin of existence of something. So it's principle of individuation, and also something beyond which knowledge cannot go. So how is it something that you cash out in the notion of autopoiesis? When you talk about legal norms, is it how much can you buy this for in a legal perspective?
You mean the autopoietic thing?
The thing about the transcendental dimension of the document. I don't understand if it is possible in a legal perspective. I really don't know. Mm-hmm. To go beyond it, to say something about how the document works. And so, in the end, the question is about authority. So, mm-hmm. do you have a legal notion of authority?
For the legal relation, for the legal bond?
Yeah.
Well, you have a notion of will more than authority. So, it depends very much on which kind of relation we're talking about. It's whether from individual and state is also a relation, but it's a non-fictional and fictional subject. Or subject to subject, so non-fictional to non-fictional. So of course, and for the legal relation, many for the contract, there are a number of characteristics that have to be present in order it to be valid, the form, and of course also the will, and how it is expressed, and whether it is expressed under force or not. So the conditions through which it is expressed, but. So there is some kind of I don't really understand your question about authority, but
I mean you're precisely answering it, so I think you actually have, but it's because I really wonder if you mentioned enforcement.
Yeah.
So how would you link enforcement, authority, and the trace dimension, I mean the documental dimension of legal rules? There is something going on about this, I think, in your talk that is very interesting, and it's very hard because it's linked with fiduciary issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a matter of something that that is out of the text.
Oh yes, that's the thing. That's the thing. Law works very much out of the text. If I would say, right? Do you agree? He's another expert in law. And as I mentioned when I was commenting on your paper, there is a whole theory, at least in Italian civil law doctrine, but I am quite sure that it has a European echo, which is called which is about the contact, the social contact, and not the social contract. So the fact that, as I was saying, the responsibility in law in general, the concept of responsibility, now I won't go into a civil law lecture because it's not really my field, but responsibility can derive either from contract or, I mean, if I punch you on your face, there was no contract, but there is a responsibility. It's a wonderful example, but it explains. But this already entails some kind of intentionality and of direct interaction. What is interesting is that in the web, you post a picture about me partying yesterday night in somewhere in a pub in Paris with Laurent. it's too late. So. That can generate a responsibility, and there was no direct contract. But there is social interaction. But then I can actually sue you, so there is a legal responsibility afterwards, and of course potentially also before. There is not; it's not so performative that all of a sudden it's generated. There are some kind of principles that govern. Law, which are one of them is bona fides. You actually mentioned it, and they're vague, and they have to stay vague because they are principles. They're not rules, but they also have governmental relevance and power. And so there is this idea of diligence, for example. If I come here and I start dancing on the table instead of presenting. I never really signed a contract where Maurizio was asking, Maurizio or the Fondazione Maison Sans Delhomme was asking me to present a paper in black and white and red, unfortunately. So I could, you know, that's the way responsibility is generated. There was no contract, but, you know, you're supposed to, as a scholar, to come here and prepare something and then talk and perform in a way which somehow... has an a priori dimension, which is obscure, but is there.
There's a clock also that is not that obscure, precisely. So I would like to thank you again for your presentation. Thank you for your questions and for having remained here.